Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison, former NFL player, now climbing the seven summits, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Okay, look, 7-8 years ago, I had to step into the fear and put a big-ass goal out there, and so I decided to start climbing all these crazy mountains around the world. It's been an absolute amazing journey. And, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've actually done 6 of the 7. I've actually been on Denali twice. I've been on climb successfully, Kilimanjaro twice. But now it's Mount Everest, the biggest boy on the block, 29,000 plus. And I'm headed over there April 2020. And I'm totally keyed up. And I'm keyed up because I've been doing all this preparation. I train like an absolute bear. And, really putting myself in a position of success. I'm going to be climbing with one of the top climbing outfitters in the world. Excited about that. And just the mountain has fascinated me for years, I'm sure like others, but really excited to do so. And so if I can actually pull this thing off, I'd be the first NFL player to do so. And so as we speak today, there's not that many firsts in the world. So I look forward to tackling that. Okay, so that's one. Two is I totally appreciate the listen on these different podcasts. I really do. And it's been an amazing journey, as I said, from not just interviewing these people, but being on the other side of the mic and really taking in their incredible stories of doing amazing things. And look, we all need to be inspired. And so if I can help provide and find more people that meet that criteria, all the better. And it just, we all need that motivation, and we all need that those words of encouragement that you can make it back relevant to your own situation and then plow forward in whatever endeavor you are trying to do. Okay, so I appreciate that. And if you want to find out anything that I have going on, you can do so at markpattisonnfl.com. I've got a book out now called Finding Your Summit, go figure. And it is essentially the playbook to what I had learned from my Hall of Fame coaches on how to emerge and do some great things in your life. It doesn't have to be mountain climbing, of course. It can be anything, but it's a plug-in that you take on these different things, these different goals, that these different strategies that I've set forth, that they set forth for me. And good things can come from that. Okay. Also on the website, you can find out more about my expedition. Obviously, I'll be going to Mount Everest, and we'll have more information about that coming up. There's an e-learning course and, of course, the podcast. And when you go to the podcast, you will find an iTunes tab. And I would be so grateful if you go in and you'd rate and review. Now, it all has to do with visibility, popularity of podcasts, because there's so many podcasts out there today that it's so easy to get lost and like, wait, where's Finding Your Summit? And I think I really do believe these stories are really amazing and incredible and can really give a lift to those people who really need it. And even if you don't, we all need to be motivated and inspired by other people to keep going. So if you'd go in and do that, I would be really, really appreciative. Okay, so let's go listen to the pod. It's going to be awesome. Here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another phenomenal episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And, you know, I've been very blessed to have a wide range of guests on the pod. And if ever there's a guy literally around just kind of the whole theme of overcoming adversity and finding your way, that would be my guest this week, Aaron Hale. He's a military war hero in my book. So the first thing I want to do is, Aaron, welcome you to the podcast.
Well, thanks, Mark. And I appreciate being invited on.
Yeah, no, it's look, there's a very famous American screen writer, director, producer, George Lucas, who wrote all the Star Wars episodes. And he had this quote that said, good luck has its storms. And I think in your case, you know, you've gone through a lot of storms, to say the least, and we're going to get into your crazy story. I think it's a beautiful story. I think it's a beautiful story on a lot of different levels about how you've overcome. I think it's a super beautiful story about the love of your life who came into your orbit. And I'm not sure, these are my words, not your words, but saved you and really brought you to where you are today, thriving and going through life the way life was meant to be lived, which is at full tilt, full steam.
And here you are. And again, thank you for coming on the pod. So let's start with giving some background so we can kind of frame all this up with the audience. So, and I'll tee some of these things up for you, but you grew up in a life of military. You were 8 years in the Navy. Let's just start with coming out of high school. What was that thing that drove you that said, one day I want to be one of those guys, one of those respected officers to be in the Navy, the Army, the Marines, the Air Force, to go out and serve your country?
And truth is, my whole life until I was a month from enlisting, I absolutely knew I'd never be in the military. I grew up living a good life. I was a patriot. I loved my country, but didn't see the military as the career path for me. But a disastrous showing in college and pretty much just living Animal House life, I realized that I needed to find direction. I needed discipline and needed to earn my tuition money back. So I joined the military, joined the Navy.
Hold on. What was that defining? And I'm really interested in this answer from you, because I went through something similar to what you're describing right now. Okay. So you go to college, you're there. What was that defining moment? Was it 19? Was it 20? Were you sitting in a room? Had you had too many beers the night before? I mean, what was it that you said, it stops today?
Well, I went to school. I had no ambition for anything. I was loving life, but I guess I was born with a common human handicap, which was just enough natural ability not to have to try at anything, just to be a little above average.
Yeah.
I was pretty decent in sports. I could do my homework and pass with B's and C's. And I was content. So there was no drive. And that's the problem with natural ability, is that eventually it fails you. There's at some point your peers in whatever you're doing that are trying surpass you. And I found that in my, later years in high school, and then definitely in college, where I didn't know how to try. I didn't know how to do the hard work. And I'd gained possibly, I think it was 50 pounds in the first three semesters.
Oh, just, gosh.
Yeah, what do they call that? The freshman 50, right?
Well, freshman 15. You took that to a new level.
Okay, so I was an overachiever early.
I love that.
But it really was. I was finding a party every night, and I literally forgot where my classes were. I still wake up sometimes having one of those dreams where, like, oh my God, I'm going to miss one of those exams and I don't know where I'm supposed to go. So it was a mutual thing, the college, and I really didn't want me to come back. So I packed up all my worldly possessions, and it all fit in the back of my Chevy S10, and I did a road trip across the country from where I grew up in Ohio to my dad's house in California. And it was my last hurrah before I was going to knuckle down and do something. And it was actually pretty cool. I stopped by all of my fraternity chapters along the way. And it really was the last hurrah, because when I got to California, I got a couple jobs. And of course, even working two jobs in California, you don't make any money. So it was then I really had to figure out. I was determined, but I had to figure out what I was going to do. I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to put in the work. But how am I going to get back to school? How am I going to learn, a trade, get that discipline? And that was when I just, the military was the answer. I could get that, I could do 4 years. I can get the GI Bill. I can get out. And at that time, I wanted to be a chef. I wanted to go to culinary school. So in you know, in living, you know, growing up, my family has a terrific artistic gene in them. My mom, my brother, and some other family, they're great visual artists, painters, and sketch artists. And my creative gene led me into the kitchen. Ever since I could reach over the counter, I was making food. I was packing lunches for my kid brother and sister, and that creativity, you know, it stuck with me my whole life.
Yeah. So hold on to that story for a second. So I just want to tie it back because, as I said before, I was really interested in your answer. Like, what was that defining moment for you? And it's almost like something out of Animal House, like road trip. And so here you go from Ohio back to California, stopping at, I mean, it's brilliant, really. You know, you're going to stop and party all the way back, and there's college girls and all this stuff. And it's a great strategy, but as you know and I know, you don't go anywhere in life. When I was in high school, I was very fortunate to be recruited. I was kind of your same the way you described yourself is that, you know, I was good enough to pass, you know, all the things I needed to pass. I happened to have a talent for football, but I never really had to work at it. And I was recruited by the Air Force Academy. And it's one thing that the one sane thing that I did when I was 17, 18 years old was really understand and realize I was not mature enough to go handle something like that. But, you know, all these things ultimately catch up with you, because when I got to the University of Washington as a freshman, my defining moment was really understanding that I was a rock star in the frat. I was doing awful in school, and I wasn't going anywhere in football. And those three combinations were a deadly mix of you're on a path that you will never accomplish anything great. And so that was my moment of truth of like, hey, you got to get it together. You got to put yourself on the right course. And if you want to get anywhere in your life, you got to go through the process and you got to go through the steps. So fast forward now to you. When you realize this, you sign up. You decide to go in the Navy. I think you came on, and because you had this one passion that was kind of hidden with inside you, that you wanted to be a cook. And so there was some, and I want to hear more about this. There was some venue, because you never realize this. You think there's the gunner and there's the guy, you know, steering the ship and the guy carrying the gun, but you forget about somebody has to feed all these people, right?
Right. That defining moment was when I received a letter from the university that said academic suspension. I'd been on probation and one more subpar GPA and the academic suspension. I was going to a state school, and I would not be admitted to another state school in Ohio for 5 years. So that was embarrassing. Yeah. All of my high school friends were going on into careers, and I've got this on, you know, on my record. So, I had that kind of fuel, that huge failure fueling, you know, the going into joining the Navy, going to basic training. And the very first thing they said at basic training was, who here in this, you know, the instructors said, who here has some college experience? Only two people, me included, raised their hand, and he pointed at me and said, okay, you're in charge of these 80 recruits, you know, the recruit chief petty officer. Yep. So all of a sudden, I'm, you know, first day in military service, and I'm put into a leadership position. It's been like that the entire, it was like that my entire military career. Before I felt ready, I was given more responsibility, and I had to live up to the rank and to live up to the expectations of my superiors and subordinates. And even though, you know, cooking on a Navy ship may just be cooking, but you know, I'm also a petty officer. I'm also a sailor, and I had to be a leader as well. So I went through basic training. Then I went through the training school for being a Navy cook, and they sent me to Italy. It was fantastic.
So this is the culinary dream. This is the culinary dream that you had, you know, to go to cooking school, a different path. But now you're in Italy, of all places, where it's like the Mecca, or, you know, France, one of those two countries, you know, that's where it all happens.
That's right. In fact, it was amazing. I got orders to shore duty in Italy, so I wouldn't be doing, you know, those huge 6 month cruises around the oceans or whatnot with like those carrier groups do. Yeah. I'd be stationed on shore in Italy. And when I got off the plane and met my command, I said, "Where was I going to be cooking?" And they didn't tell me this at the school, but in the Navy, they looked at cooks as the civilian equivalent of hotel restaurant management. I said, no. On shore, we don't do the cooking. Civilians do that. What am I going to be doing? You're going to be running the barracks, our version of the hotel. So not only that, they put me in the maintenance department. So a far cry from cooking. I was running trouble call tickets from the front desk to the local national Italian public works guys, the plumbers, the electricians. Well, I mean, even though on my off-duty time, I immersed myself in the culture, I did that while I was working as well. I was with these Italians all day long. So all day long, of course, we were having coffee in between every, you know, espresso, little cafes, every, you know, between every trouble call or you know, call. But we were also, you know, going from door to door. I was everywhere I went, I would be pointing and saying, "Come si dice, come si dice. How do you say this? How do you say that?" And I was learning Italian from these roughnecks, and it was fantastic. I made the best of the situation.
Hey, this pod is sponsored by Laird Superfoods. So many products to choose from your Instafuel, your coffee, your tea, your smoothies. And I love the superfood creamer and use the hydration powders like the beets, the coconut, the matcha, the turmeric to mix all into my 7 Summit smoothie. And it's so good. Log on to LairdSuperfood.com and get your 20% off when you use the code MarkP20. Okay? So get your Laird Superfood, and I guarantee it will help fuel your journey.
Yeah. What I want to do is I want to tie that back in just a second on where that goes, because you were in this position of being a cook, and now it's 2006, and you wanted to be more involved in the day-to-day military aspect of what you're doing beyond just being a cook. Maybe you had tapped out, or maybe you plateaued, or wherever that, but this whole story comes full circle. So we'll get back to that. But tell us about in 2006, what direction that you wanted to go into.
Well, by 2004, you know, both wars were in full swing. I was at this time, I'd made it to cooking for the Admiral, and I wanted to do something a little more direct. By the time I'd gotten back from home from Italy, and I was stationed in Rhode Island, it was about 2006 when I volunteered to be an individual augmentee, basically Air Force and Navy personnel filling in Army roles in Afghanistan. So I would be cooking, but this time I'd be running an Army chow hall for a base in Farah, Afghanistan. So now, instead of the Admiral's staff of about 25 or so, I was running a huge kitchen for 500, 600, 700 NATO troops. Funny enough, though, there were a couple platoons of Italian special forces on the base. So I learned a little Italian when I was in Italy, and I got to use it when I went to Afghanistan.
That's great. So all this is going is now you're in Afghanistan, and you end up being involved. I don't know if this is your full-time thing, but the EOD. And if I read this correctly, what EOD stands for, the acronym is Explosive Ordnance Disposal. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Tell us more about that.
Explosive Ordnance Disposal, the EOD technicians are the military's bomb squad. You've seen that movie, The Hurt Locker?
Yep.
Although I don't really like to refer, I call it the Ouch Closet. But yeah, that's us. We're when I was there, I met some EOD technicians. I learned all about the job, and I was instantly hooked. The tight-knit brotherhood, the technical aspect of it, the fact that we're first responders. They were there to take hazards off the battlefield. You know, we're there to anything that goes boom, from bullets to nuclear weapons, we're the first responders. When everybody's running and screaming from the thing that explodes, we're the ones that walk in and make it, you know, mitigate the hazard. So I was definitely hooked. The only problem was the Navy at the time wasn't taking cooks into the EOD program. And my rank in the Navy was undermanned. So there was really so little chance of me becoming an EOD tech in the Navy, though everything's waverable. Nobody wants to tell you. By the time my deployment was up in 2007, my contract with the Navy was also coming to an end. And when I got home, I let my contract expire and I walked over to the Army recruiter and signed up to be an EOD technician. And they let me keep my rank. I came in as a sergeant. I went through all the training. It was a year of, you know, learning all about explosives, safeties, and almost as soon as I got stationed at my first Army base, I was sent to, I was deployed to Iraq. And then almost a year later, I was deployed to Afghanistan, this time as a 2011 as an EOD team leader. And that's when I really, really paid my, I really put in the hard work. Nearly every day we were dismantling IEDs. We were working on post-blast, almost like a CSI type of scenarios after an IED, detonates. And it was a very busy time.
Yeah. So again, I just want to explain a little bit more. The IED is an explosive that essentially is put into the ground. So if you're driving a convoy truck and you're driving along and you go over these things, they're going to blow up and blow your car up. And hopefully in their mind, trying to blow up anybody that's inside these vehicles.
Right. Well, it was about 8 months into my deployment when I was just back 2 weeks for an hour. Back home for weeks where I got to visit family. I got to witness my 2-year-old son or my 1-year-old, my son turned 1. I got to spend Thanksgiving with the family. And within a few days, I was back out in the battlefield. I threw my luggage in the back of the truck and my team picked me up to take me back to our forward operating base. Along the way, there was an IED in the on the side of the road. So the convoy commander set out security, and we got to work. I tossed the luggage off of the robot and sent the robot out of the truck. I had found a pressure plate IED. It's the same thing we've been seeing the entire deployment. Just a simple little vegetable oil jug full of homemade explosives with a pressure plate, just a couple pieces of plywood and some lamp cord connecting the whole thing to a 9-volt battery. The robot did its job. It separated the components and made it generally safe, but it couldn't get the jug out of the hard-packed earth. I wanted to get as much evidence as I possibly could so we could catch this guy that was doing, putting these things out there. So I wanted all the biometrics. I wanted the samples of the explosive. I wanted to get this thing. So I stepped out of the truck and I started making my approach. About 20 or 30 meters from the original IED, there was a secondary that hadn't yet been detected. About the same time my metal detector was trying to tell me something pretty important is when it went off. It punted me into the sky. And I landed on my knees and elbows, still conscious, but the lights went out. I was tossed into pitch black. Of course, first things first, I wiggled the fingers and toes, did a systems, function check. Knees and elbows seemed to be all intact. The only thing was I couldn't see a thing. I originally thought that my helmet had been pushed over my face, and that was why I couldn't see. So I reached up to adjust my helmet only to find out that it was gone. And that's when I thought, oh no, this is really bad. The Army's going to want that back.
Yeah.
But my team came in, pulled me out. And medevac chopper was there in minutes because we were just out of the airbase. And within 48 hours, I was at Walter Reed. And I was trying to learn now how to be a blind person.
So when this explosive went off, it essentially went off in your face. The impact just made you fly in the air and land. But were you bleeding everywhere? Was your face torn up? Like, what was the damage there? I know it ultimately resulted in you not being able to see, but in terms of the facial wounds, was it deep? A lot of stitches?
Well, it depends on how you look at it, but matter of perspective, thankfully the IED only hit me in the head.
Yeah.
I guess, in our family, we have pretty solid heads. But from the neck down, I was virtually unscathed. But it cracked my skull. I was leaking spinal fluid right out of my nose.
Yeah.
Blew up both my eardrums, my right eardrum far worse than my left. And there was scars, burns. When an explosion goes off, there's secondary fragmentation, rocks and dirt and everything. That just pelted my face. I was pulling rocks out of my gums for days.
Hmm.
And a piece of something crossed right across both my eyes. Took out completely my right eye, cut the bridge of my nose, and gashed my left eye. We later find that the doctors just couldn't save either. Hmm. So I was completely blind and it'd be permanent.
So... Look, this would be devastating for anybody. How long were you in this place of a recovery? And then secondly, a place where, did you go into any kind of depression or did you immediately say, you know what, I'm going to make the best of this and start charging forward?
I thank the powers that be every single day that I didn't bring back PTSD or depression or those severely traumatic internal wounds of war.
Yep.
And I also, in relation to other injuries, I got off pretty easy. I was in Walter Reed for about 5 weeks while they tried to restore my face and my ears, my eyes, but there was nothing they could do about my eyes. And during that time, those demons try to creep in, the what ifs, the why me's.
Yeah.
I trained so hard and we're better, we're smarter, we're more well funded and equipped. And it's so low tech, these IEDs. I was embarrassed for myself that they got me. So yeah, I was going through all sorts of mess of these emotions, but I've got a strong family, lots of support, and I'm just not wired that way.
Yeah.
So when I could finally, once I was released from Walter Reed, I had to go to the one of the blind rehabilitation units the VA has around the country. I went to Augusta, Georgia, and started. It was blind school. I spent about 6 months there learning use the cane, learning basic living skills, manual skills, that kind of stuff. And all of those accessible technologies like the computer, the phone. And the very first thing I did when I was able to, bring up a search engine and really use my computer, I started typing in blind plus whatever, outdoors, blind plus doing something. And people kept coming up, like names like Eric Weinmayer, the first blind person to climb Mount Everest. Lonnie Bedwell, the first blind person to kayak the Grand Canyon. And I figured, I was thinking, how the heck am I going to be able to do anything without being able to see? Nobody ever thinks about that before it happens. So now I'm plunged into darkness and I got to figure out how to be a dad, a soldier. I got to be a man. And these guys were doing it.
Yeah. So Eric Weinmayer has been on the pod and total stud. As you said, he climbed the seven summits. He's stood on top of Mount Everest, and he's kayaked 300 miles down the Colorado River. And so if anybody can imagine just doing that with everything, you know, working for you, let alone essentially being in a dark closet, going upside down and hitting rocks. I mean, it's just amazing. But, you know, Eric has been very inspiring, and I think he's inspired a lot of other people. Now, did you go to his camp in Colorado?
His camp?
Yeah, well, I think he's got a
I was just there this weekend for his What's Your Everest event.
Yeah, What's Your Everest, yeah.
Yeah, I was the one who was invited to speak and tell my story at the top of the mountain this year.
Oh, that is so great. Yeah, so essentially what Eric does for everybody is he invites, I'm not going to call it a disability, I'm going to call it an ability, but everybody that has gone through their trials and tribulations, that has got some issue that they've had to deal with, he invites them out there, and it really, I think he inspires people to think about possibilities.
Well, I credit him with being the catalyst for my after, trauma growth, because when I found that he, somebody had climbed Everest, I knew that I could stay off my butt. I wouldn't be one of those, 22 that we lose each day. I wouldn't be sitting on the couch popping pills. I'm going to go out and figure this thing out. And I sought Eric out, on the 10th anniversary of his Everest summit. He took a team of wounded veterans up a sister summit in the Himalayas. Mm-hmm. And then it became a program. In 2013, I joined a wounded veteran team up a mountain in the Peruvian Andes. And from there, I began running marathons, whitewater kayaking. I kayaked with Lonnie Bedwell. We did class 3 rapids in Yellowstone. And I mean, from there, it was, I found success. I found that, it's because of our struggles that we, you weight, your muscles get stronger. Our hardships are the weights, are the, what builds our mind and our heart and our soul. And for a few years, almost 4 years, I was accepting every challenge I could find. I was seeking out more challenges, and I was doing what I possibly couldn't have done before I joined the military. I didn't have that mindset yet. And then 2 weeks before I was set to fly out to do my first of the seven summits, Kilimanjaro.
Yep.
That's when meningitis struck, and I was sent right back to the hospital.
Yeah, so tell everybody what bacterial meningitis is.
Well, it's a horrible bug, and it attacks the brain. And it to me, it felt like just pouring acid right into your brain, like it was getting squeezed by a vise, like an alligator head was crushing my head. It was the most horrible experience, far worse, in fact, than the IED blast. I was out for 4 days, or at least I lost 4 days. As soon as I got into I was rushed to the hospital. I was confused at that time. I'd broken out of my straps. When I was finally lucid enough, I was still, I still had hallucinations. I was terribly confused. And between the high doses of antibiotics and the bacteria itself, it took what was left of my hearing that the blast didn't take. And it even took quite a bit of my vestibular balance, the inner ear sense of balance.
Yep.
So I was, even when I fell asleep in the hospital bed, I would have this sense of falling, and I would wake up jumping out of the bed. I got home in a wheelchair, and now I was using my trekking poles that I took into the mountains with me. I was using those to get to the mailbox and back. And that was an arduous struggle. It was horrible.
So basically what you're saying is that not only at this point were you blind from what happened in Afghanistan, but now you're deaf. You can't hear because this meningitis has taken over your brain and stripped you of that. So you're now in your own self little prison trying to figure out, how in the hell do I get out of this thing?
Yeah. For almost 6 full months, I was trapped in my body. I was blind, deaf, could barely walk, definitely couldn't get on the treadmill, couldn't communicate. My girlfriend at the time, now my wife, Michaela, was writing every single word, every single letter of every word in the palm of my hand just to communicate, to get her message, anybody else who wanted to talk to me, get that across. That was the only way we could talk.
Let me ask you this, because I think this is such a key turning point in your life. So I enter the picture, Michaela, who's now your wife, right? At the time, so you're basically a physical mess, and you can't walk, you can't see, and you can't hear. I can only imagine. And where in the whole scheme of things did you meet her? Because to me, and I want to talk further about this, is that she is the true shining star. She's the true angel in all this story. I mean, you've got this amazing resiliency about you. You've got this positivity about you. But she really seemed to me, at least, that from the video I saw, that she was your lifeline to that transition, that gap, that bridge to where you guys are today.
You absolutely hit the nail on the head. We've known each other since we were kids. Our mothers were childhood friends. My mom, they both grew up in Baltimore, but my mom moved to Ohio, her mom to Colorado. And later, we reconnected on Facebook, social media. But, we'd just been chatting a little bit. We started messaging each other, phone calls. And then just days before the meningitis struck, I'd convinced her to fly out. She was living in California at the time, to fly out to meet me for a week-long first official date. And it was an amazing, amazing week. We had a wonderful time. And then she had to get back to work. She flew back to California. And just days later, I'm in the hospital. And like I said, I'd lost 4 days. When I actually came to, there was my mother and Michaela standing by my bedside. And the first thing I said was, "How'd you get here?" Because I thought it was just minutes.
Yeah.
But she nursed me back to health. She moved in. She didn't go back home to California. She had friends move all of her stuff for her. And she became my caregiver. She became my savior, my angel. And now, of course, I was not a very happy guy at the time, but she just wouldn't let me give up. Hmm. And when I was feeling weak, she propped me up.
I hope from your past, when you did have your sight, you said you grew up as childhood friends and on, you married a very pretty girl. So hopefully you still have that image in your head. So, I mean, really her beauty comes from her inner soul, her heart, what she's done for you, but she's just got all things working for her. And she, very selfless in the way that, all people that are married should be towards each other. So, all right. So she gets you off the ground. She gets you back in the game. That was a struggle in itself. But then, and this is the reason why I'd cut you off earlier about when you were talking about this path you're going on as a cook, all this seems to come full circle, because despite that you're re-energized in life about being able to go cycling and do marathons and kayaking and going up mountains, it seemed like, to me at least, these are my words, that you really were seeking more of a passion with purpose versus just going out and exercising, which, I'm sure feeds your soul too. But this is when the whole EOD or some variation of that, really started to germinate. Talk about that Thanksgiving.
Well, I mean, it's hard to imagine not being able to see or hear and just being so isolated. It's a horrible, lonely place.
Yeah.
And of course, Michaela was there. My family was there. But my whole world ended at the tips of my fingers. And of course, in this situation, I did what any person would do. I started a chocolate company.
Of course.
Yeah. The holidays were coming up, and that's a very special time for me because, of course, I love to cook, and it's, you know, the Thanksgiving is, and Thanksgiving and Christmas, they're excuses for the whole family to gather, reunions and the special time, and it's an excuse to just be an absolute glutton. Yeah. So we were determined to have a great Thanksgiving. We invited friends and family, and it was going to be huge. So I started cooking way in advance, weeks in advance. And I was making I was going to have a couple turkeys, one in the smoker, one in the oven, a ham, all the trimmings, and then the desserts. Oh, my gosh. I was making cakes and pies and cookies, and then fudge. One batch after another. I couldn't stop. It became a therapy for me. Michaela had seen for the first time in months something on me that she hadn't seen, and that was a smile. I was actually enjoying myself despite the situation, and I was making all this so much fudge that she had to start sneaking it out the front door to give it away to friends and neighbors. I say sneaking it like you've got to be real stealthy around people were coming back and asking if they could buy more from us, and the capitalist in me said, well, of course you may. And that's when I started my second EOD career. EOD now stands for Extraordinary Delights. We started the website eodfudge.com. And we began selling it, in earnest.
Yeah. Well, okay. So a couple things. I just want to reset one thing. If the listener is wondering, like, how you can hear me ask you questions, is because you after that whole episode, you had implants put into hearing implants put into your ears, and so your hearing slowly came back to some level. So certainly you can hear me loud and clear. So I just want to clear that up in case there was any question. And then the second thing is, I went through and was reading about all your different fudges that you make, and I'm not going to do it justice right now, but you've got these like incredible ingredients. It feels almost like I just went to some, you know, Whole Foods type grocery store, and you've got these incredible things that you put in. So it's just not fudge like I would make, 'cause I don't know how to cook. You know, if I can do a bagel with cream cheese, I'm pretty, you know, fancy, but you've taken this whole handcrafted fudge EOD business to a whole different level.
Well, thanks. Yeah. As far as the technology goes, I've got cochlear implants in both my ears because my ears are completely shut off. The bacteria ate away at the internal, you know, internal workings, and all they're good for is holding up the implant now. And of course to make my face look even, but, it took, like I said, over 6 months because they first went to the more damaged ear and did the implant. And even before that, they had to wait for the infection to clear. And then there was a surgery to put the implant in, and you had to wait a few weeks for the site to heal. Then you got to go to the hospital to get the exterior processor tuned in. But then it's a whole learning experience. And I'm sure you've heard of the Stockdale paradox, where he says the POWs, the POWs that wouldn't make it were the ones that were hopeful. Because they would keep saying, you know, we'll be rescued by Christmas, and Christmas would come and go. And then they would say, okay, we're going to be rescued by Easter, and Easter would come and go, and no rescue. And then you'd finally see that they'd given up. And he said that within 3 days, they'd be dead. Well, I've got tons of drive, tons of optimism. I accidentally stepped in my own hope because I figured as soon as I had the implant, I'd be able to hear again. And oh my gosh, like I said, the isolation was so excruciating that as soon as I had it turned on, I was like, okay, let's hear. But it's a learning process. You got to tune and tweak, and your brain has to learn this digital input. It's completely different. And still today, it's much like calling your friend who's at a restaurant and your friend hits the speaker and just puts it in the middle of the table at a busy restaurant.
Yeah.
Any external noises, and you know, you can't tell what's going on. But it's far better than the alternative, which, you know, 20 years ago, I would have been pulling the full Helen Keller. As far as the fudges go, and the flavors, yeah, you know, I love to use some of my influences in my travels and my cooking experiences. Just like one of our flavors is a twist on tiramisu. Literally, tiramisu is translated into pick me up because it's got coffee, liquor, it's, you know, nuts and chocolate and all that, everything you love. So what I came up with was American pick me up, which is an all American version. It's got the coffee, it's got white chocolate, dark chocolate, and then it's got, you know, Georgia pecans and of course Kentucky bourbon.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading that one last night. That's why I didn't want to do the description and the ingredients of what you're talking about injustice by me trying to describe it. I'm glad you just went through it, but I'm like Pavlov's dog, you know, as I'm reading the ingredients, I've got like saliva coming out of my mouth. It's just amazing. And, you know, it taps back into your creativity. You started the pod by talking about, you know, your parents and your relatives and your brothers and sisters. You know, there's a lot of people in your chain that have had this gene in there. And it's interesting that, you know, probably something that you never thought you would really tap into has come out in a very creative way. And now in a very entrepreneurial way for you to live a life of a passion and purpose and get after it and build this company into something.
Yeah. Well, I've found out that we really have limitless sources or, you know, at least potential for strength, endurance, for resilience. We just need to figure out how to tap into it. And I got thrown into it, but in a sense it was a blessing because now I'm living a very happy life. I'm going after, you know, more mountains and more marathons. I ran my first ultra marathon around 50 miles last July.
Wow.
I still am determined to climb my seven summits.
Well, listen, I will climb with you anytime you want to climb. I'm coming up on my seventh, but people have said to me, hey, Mark, you know, so you're going to Everest, you know, knock on wood that you're going to make it and it's all going to be good. And then I assume you're just going to shut it down. I'm like, you know what? I'm just beginning. I've got so many things ahead of me, places I want to go. You know, again, we can cross paths later after my Everest, but again, love to be involved in any kind of climb that you want to do. And help out with that any way I possibly can. So where can people find out more about you and what you're up to?
Of course, they can read a little bit more about us and of course, buy more fudge at eodfudge.com. And then they can like and follow us on all the social medias at eodconfections.
That's awesome. All right. Well, listen, I am going to order some of this fudge so I can stuff my refrigerator full of it so I can stay nice and happy and full of sweets, you know, especially as we go into fall and winter. And sounds like the perfect gift for other people as well. And I really appreciate my hat again goes off to you. I've had other war heroes, Nate Boyer and many other guys like that on the pod, and each time I'm inspired, and it's just I look at my own life and think about, you know, I really haven't accomplished that much nearly as what you guys have done, sacrificed for your country, and you took the ultimate price, paid the ultimate price with your disabilities, but again, I call them abilities. On really, it's been a springboard for you to really do so many of these amazing things, more things than most people do in life. So congratulations to you on that.
Well, thank you. And I commend you on all your past and future successes.
Well, listen, I totally appreciate it. Okay, listen, I'm very, very, very thankful that you came on the pod and just very thankful that this all worked out in the way it did. So he is Aaron Hale, Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's absolutely mutual. Thank you for inviting me on.
Absolutely. Okay.
Hey, thank you so much for dropping in and listening to another amazing episode of Finding Your Summit. Truly incredible people doing spectacular things in life. And I hope you were inspired just like I continue to be. Look, I am super grateful that you came in and subscribed to this pod and would be more than appreciative if you gave the show a ratings and review on iTunes. Trust me, it matters. And then also go share it with your friends, of course. Okay, until next week, go do something great. And remember, it takes a little more to make a champion. Bye. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.